you're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus, you're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel.
Ah, oh, so appetizing. KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. It is the Bill Handel Show. There's a very exciting announcement from Mr. Handel at 9:55 this morning. So thanks to all of you. Pastathon 2021 was a giant success. But how big of a success? That's the question. And that's what's going to be answered at 9:55 this morning. Handel gets to give the final tally of not just money, but pounds of pasta and sauce that we raised thanks to you for Katerina's Club. This is Chef Bruno's charity that feeds 25,000 kids a week in Southern California. And you think about that, and it's astronomical what this man can do to help benefit the kids in Southern California. So again, this will be at 9:55 this morning. Handel will have all of the numbers for you of both money and pasta and sauce. And there he is, the Grinch himself.
Yeah.
You are.
Yeah, sorry about that. I had an unscheduled meeting down the hall that I couldn't miss.
Oh, wow. That's TMI.
Yeah. Well,
I tease that you get to give the totals at 9:55.
Okay, good for you.
And thank you, by the way, to Smart and Final and Barilla, because we couldn't do this without you as well.
Yeah, some great numbers.
Oh, my gosh.
Some great numbers. But I am going to announce, or we will, you know, we can do it together, at 9:50 what the final numbers are. That's as of yesterday or as of this morning.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, a lot of money in pasta still comes in.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
For several weeks. So if you haven't donated to Pastathon, there is still time until next year when we do our second Pastathon or our next Pastathon. We'll do number 12 next year.
And don't forget, too, if you go to the Anaheim White House on your way into dinner, just because they were taking donations between 8 and 3 during the day, they're not doing that anymore. But right as you walk in, I'm sure you saw it, there's a big Santa and a giant box. And right as you walk up the ramp into the restaurant, you can dump your pasta and sauce right there. So it's great. They'll take anything.
And people come in throughout the year.
Sure.
And come in with donations. A lot of donations happen, not necessarily KFI listeners, although it would be terrific, going to dinner at the Anaheim White House, spectacular food, and bringing pasta and sauce with them as part of the donation.
And if you've got that person who has everything in your life, I think donating to charity for people is amazing. Why not donate to Katerina's Club? That's your gift.
And on behalf of Bruno, if anybody brings in 10 pounds and pasta and sauce, the discount off your dinner is absolutely zero. It is simply you being generous to the kids.
Slap on the back for you.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah. Hey, nice time. But it's, you know, can you think of a better cause? Now, let's move right into the Cuomo story. And it's a big one. Now, I watch CNN quite a bit. I also watch Fox. And I love both sides of the political spectrum on TV. I like CNN because it is so biased. And I like Fox because it is because it's just nuts. Now, what happened? The big story is CNN and Chris Cuomo, who was the most popular show on CNN. And he conceded in March of 2021, last March, that he could not ethically cover the sexual harassment allegations against his brother, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. And he said the family ties were just too strong for him to be independent. However, it turned out after he said that, he provided behind-the-scenes counsel to his brother and his brother's staff. So by August of 2021, when the governor, Andrew, resigned in the wake of this scandal, there were calls for Chris to step down from his job because there was an initial New York Attorney General's report revealed he had helped draft a statement for his brother in February. And all of a sudden, the issue of conflict arose. Well, let me tell you, December 4th, 2 days ago, CNN has fired Cuomo. And that was after a few days of suspending him indefinitely, which I thought was a firing. And then they just simply said he's fired. Not that I ever thought he was going to come back anyway. And this is less than a week after the Attorney General's office released pages of transcripts, exhibits, videos detailing how extensive the help was that Chris Cuomo gave his brother for months. Now, everybody knows, and no secret is ever made, that the Cuomos were brothers. Excuse me, I'm going to sneeze.
Bless you.
Thank you. That was a pretty good sneeze. Everybody knew, and he had made it very plain, and he talked about his brother, of course, being the governor, and that was certainly part of his show. The point is that he brought his brother on board and crossed the line. When I mean on board is as the pandemic was roaring through America, Cuomo brought his brother Andrew on board as the governor of Texas and talked about what the governor was doing throughout the pandemic. And Andrew Cuomo actually became the poster child of how governors should act. He sort of became the governor, much like Rudy Giuliani became the mayor through 9/11. And so everybody sort of accepted it, you know, that he would come aboard, even though that is a little bit iffy. The appropriate thing to do, the cleanest thing to do, is simply say, hey, I don't deal with that. There's too much of a conflict, much like I don't have as expert guests advertisers that I advertise with, even knowing that they are the best in terms of explaining what's going on. Too much of a conflict. You can't do it. Even the perception of conflict, you can't do it. And I'll tell you, was a good story is John Cobalt when he owned a piece of a local radio team. And anytime there was a story, he always said, and I want you to know that I have a percentage of this team. I mean, there was never an issue of not disclaiming that story. And I always thought I admire John for that, for always doing that. And so Chris Cuomo, let's just say he crossed the line, and CNN knew about the interviews that Chris Cuomo did with his brother on the air talking about the pandemic. But it was a very different animal when he helped his brother defend the sexual allegation charges and didn't tell CNN. And then they find out from another source, in this case, the Attorney General's report. So goodbye. Ciao, baby. Now, I wonder if he had told CNN prior that I intend on helping my brother. I think CNN would have said no. You can't do it. And the appropriate thing is for him to have said, my brother had these allegations of my brother, and I am not only not reporting it, I have to ignore any perception of a conflict. Therefore, I will never see him, nor talk to him, nor any family member, nor anybody who has ever met him until all of the allegations are somehow dealt with. Nah, he probably wouldn't have gone that far.
Could he have taken leave?
He could have, but and that would have been, I think, ethical. I'm taking leave to help my brother.
Absolutely.
Although the argument is he's taking leave to help his brother in defending a sexual misconduct charge.
I would not have said to help my brother. I would have just said I'm taking leave because of the perception that this has and me covering the story and there's too much conflict of interest.
Maybe. That makes sense.
You could have stepped away and looked like a freaking hero. You could have looked like the most ethical person in the world.
Yeah. I think so. I think that would have worked. I mean, if I were head of CNN, I would have allowed that to happen. But Jeff Zucker is, the way he thinks may be differently, and it obviously is. Fun fact about Jeff Zucker. You know where Jeff Zucker made his name?
No.
He was executive producer of the Today Show at 26.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Coming up, Bob Dole. Hey, I'm Bob Dole. Bob Dole is dead at 98. And let me tell you, this is a life well lived. And I want to share with you the life of an extraordinary American, for real. This is KFI AM 640. Let's check in with Jennifer Jones Lee. And good morning. Bill Handel here. Monday morning, December 6th. Coming up at 8 o'clock, we have medical news with Dr. Jim Keeney talking about the Omicron variant. Going to be talking about, I haven't decided yet. So let's just continue on. Well, at 9:55, I am going to be telling you what the figures were as Pasathon, our version of Pasathon, ended last night. And from what I understand, it's pretty good news. I don't know the numbers, incidentally. I'm not teasing. Oh, at 9:55, that's when I'm getting him. Bob Dole died at the age of 98. And Bob Dole was an extraordinary American. He was an extraordinary man. He grew up in Depression-era Kansas, and he rose to become one of the premier fixtures in Washington, D.C. He was badly wounded in action in Italy, lost the use of his right arm, a genuine war hero. He was rushing to save a fellow soldier when he was hit with shrapnel. He reached the peak of Republican politics. He was the party's presidential nominee and potential nominee many times, an actual nominee once, vice presidential nominee, Senate leader. I mean, he was almost 40 years serving the public. And his family said he died in his sleep early yesterday morning, having served the United States of America faithfully for 79 years. I mean, he was there a long, long time. He was in the Senate for almost 40 years. He had been in public service for 79 years. He was born in Russell, Kansas, Dust Bowl country, and grew up during the Great Depression. His family actually had to move into the basement of their home and rent out the rest of it just to eat. And Dole had a paper route, and he was a job behind the soda counter at a drugstore. And here's something that is kind of interesting. He was a standout athlete recruited by the University of Kansas. He was on the basketball team, the football team, the track team, and was planning to go into medical school until the war came and he enlisted in the Army, commissioned a lieutenant. And in April 45 in Italy, he came under fire while attempting to rescue his radio man, hit in the shoulder and spine, temporarily paralyzed from the neck down. And his fellow soldiers actually rolled him to safety because he was going up a hill and gave him a shot of morphine and then using his own blood to write M on his forehead to warn the medics not to give him another dose. His recovery and rehab took more than 3 years, bunch of surgeries, some of them paid with donations from his neighbors. He lost his right shoulder, a kidney, the use of his right hand. He did regain his ability to walk and the partial use of his left hand. He received 2 Purple Hearts and a Bronze Star for valor. But if you ever were to see a picture of Bob Dole, he has a pen gripped in his right hand because he couldn't use the right hand. And part of that was so no one would shake hands or try to shake hands with that right hand. And he actually was a funny guy. In 1972, he was the Republican National Chairman. If you remember, the Watergate break-in had happened. And on election eve, as Republican National Chairman, he said, "We got the burglar vote," which I thought was hilarious. 1948, he married a woman who was an occupational therapist that was working on him. They had a daughter. He divorced her and married Washington lawyer Elizabeth Hanford in 1975. And she became a big fixture in Washington, and they became the power couple. Elizabeth Dole on her own, serving as Secretary of Transportation, Secretary of Labor, President of the Red Cross, by the way, of which she earned almost $1 million a year, and as a U.S. Senator from North Carolina. So really, truly a power couple. And Bob Dole got close to the White House a bunch of times. In 1976, he was picked as Gerald Ford's running mate after Vice President Nelson Rockefeller withdrew from the ticket. They lost to Jimmy Carter, Walter Mondale. Again, Dole ran in 1980 and 1988, the Republican primaries, but was unable to get the nomination because he was Bob Dole and early losses to Pat Buchanan and Steve Forbes. He won the nomination, and then he went to run for president, and you can't do both, or it's very difficult to do both. And then following his presidential loss, he then focused on his law practice, philanthropic efforts, occasional gig as a TV pitchman, most famously for Viagra. I mean, he was a guy who just didn't care. I mean, in a good way, in a very positive way. He said, hey, a former presidential nominee pitching Viagra as an older man. Wow. Would he have said, I would have run harder?
Oh.
Had I, never mind. That's more, let me say, we run in a difficult race, so to speak. Right. That's Bob Dole, and 98 years old, extraordinary American. All right, where are Californians fleeing to? Right, we talk about out-of-state a lot. There is a sidebar story to that, and I'm going to share that with you when we come back. This is KFI AM 640. Let's check in with Jennifer. Handle here, and the morning crew, sans Wayne, will be back on Thursday. Some of the big stories that we are covering, former U.S. Senator Bob Dole died yesterday. He was 98 years old, and what a story of his. And we're going to give you the last numbers as of, I think, last night when Postathon ended. I'm going to give you how much money we've raised and the poundage, if you will, of not only the pasta and sauce, but I think we're going to give you the poundage of us here on the morning show.
No, we're not.
Women aren't very thrilled about that usually, are they? That's just not something we share. Age and weight is just not something that is a good idea to talk about. Now, here is a question for you. We know that the number of Californians who have left to live in Arizona, Nevada, Texas is pretty high. Matter of fact, I would argue almost astronomical. But you know where the biggest influx of people, or the place where the largest number of people are coming in from? The coastal cities of California. And why the coastal cities? Because living in Los Angeles, San Francisco area, Palo Alto, is impossible. Now, I often say, if you want to buy here in Burbank a three-bedroom home that was built in the 50s or 60s of maybe 1,500 square feet, that's north of $1 million. I mean, that truly is science fiction. But I'll tell you where the migration is shuffling, to the Inland Empire. That's the biggest number, or the biggest location where people are going to outside of the coastal, leaving the coastal cities. Here's what's going on. The drive from the Inland Empire to jobs in LA, Orange County is super long, but we're used to traffic here. So that becomes sort of the de rigueur life of living in, here in Southern California. And by the way, a whole lot of newcomers who have come to the Inland Empire are willing to pay that price in exchange for a lot less expensive housing, better schools. Remember, LA Unified is a real problem. Also, remote workers, that's easy because being on the freeway, it's not just the time that you're on the freeway. It's the stop-and-go traffic that drives you completely nuts. So you have about 500,000 California households, individuals and families, have moved from one area to another in the state. And the biggest number, of course, is those moving from the super expensive coastal areas to the far less expensive inland areas. Yesterday, I was driving through along the 5 on the way back from Las Vegas. I went to Las Vegas over the weekend and drove for the first time in a zillion years. And there were places that I was passing, right? Gorman, Yermo. I'm going, who the hell lives here? Who in God names live here? I'll tell you, people that want to buy a house for $35,000. That's who live here. But where do they work? I mean, what do they do? Well, I'll tell you what happens in the Inland Empire. People have an easy time getting a job. Why? Well, for example, Amazon has a 2 million square foot fulfillment center, one of their largest ones. But here's the problem, is those jobs pay relatively little money. Those are not white collar or highly skilled jobs. So let's say you have 10,000 people, but you're talking about making $17, $18 an hour. That's not a lot of money. So if you talk about the median income in those areas, it's pretty low. So last year, a net of 129,000 households left California. However, more households actually left coastal cities or expensive cities to move into the Inland Empire.
That was us.
You moved into the Inland Empire.
Yep.
And Scott is leaving his job as a management at FEMA to work at a fulfillment house,
yes,
right?
Yes, he'll be at the UPS down the road.
Yeah. My daughter Pamela has entered a program, combined program by Amazon and the University of New Hampshire. And their first class was 70 people, and she got in.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, she's a nerd. She taught herself computer languages. She's never taken a computer class. You can figure stuff out. You know, it's
that's huge.
Yeah, no, it is huge. And it'll be a year course. And it is no joke. She is at this 8-10 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean, it is a bitch to go through this course. And I told her, you know what? I am so proud of you because you're going to spend a year learning how to stuff products into packages. And you have to be very careful because those packages get a little heavy and you're on your feet all day. She said, I don't think that's where I'm going with this one. Not quite. For the past 30 years, the Inland Empire has grown 78%. 4.5 million people live there, more than twice as fast as the state in general was growing. And it's all going to the Inland Empire. The economy, no surprise, is booming. Because it's not just Amazon with the 2 million square foot fulfillment center, but also you've got fulfillment centers like Walmart, other major e-commerce companies. On the trip that I drove, passing through various areas, I mean, it was, I remember there's one distribution center, I don't know who had it, but it was a building that was so large that there must have been over 100 of those loading docks on the side of the building, and that's one building. So that's where people are going. And of course, the price of housing I'm not going to say ridiculously low, but if you go to places in Kansas, Nebraska, there you're going to find terrific housing for $280,000. There are plenty of people who have sold their homes. For example, let's say you live here in Burbank and you bought a home 10, 15 years ago and you spent $300,000 for that home. And you sell the house for $1.2 million and you go, you retire or you move. Let's say you can do remote work where you don't have to go into the office at all. Let's say you're in the computer industry. I have friends that actually don't even have offices. So you take your money and you move to places like Austin where the price is going up pretty dramatically. But you can buy a home in very nice areas for $300,000, $350,000. And we're talking about a good size home, 2,500 square feet with a good size yard, where here you've sold your house for $1.1 million and all that extra money. Now you get to pay taxes because California is a wonderful state. If you're in the upper bracket, well, for example, if you sell your house for $1 million, trust me, you're in the upper income bracket. California still pays, you still pay the 13.5%. California doesn't believe in capital gain. I mean, they call it something else. It's not ordinary income, but they charge you for it, which is one of the reasons maybe people stay put. I mean, I think of selling my house and moving into Yermo, for example, a population of 620 people. And not much going on there. A lot of the businesses are boarded up. But man, you know, it's I'm not doing it because the taxes are too high. And it's Yermo.
And we just lost all the listeners in Yermo. Thanks, Handel.
What, all three of them?
That's three listeners.
That's a good point. Yeah, you know what? Every listener counts. That's true. That's absolutely true. We are looking here in California. Well, let me give you this. How about Category 3, not a hurricane, Category 3 heat wave? What's that about? I'm going to talk to you about a program that will be instituted here in California. This is KFI AM 640. Let's check in with Jennifer.
Sometimes all I think about is you. Late nights in the middle of June. He waves been faking me out.
KFI AM 640. Bill Handel here on a Monday morning, December the 6th. Holiday season, well, at least the Christmas Hanukkah. Well, Hanukkah is over as of last night. So the Christmas season is fast approaching. And some of the big stories we are covering, former U.S. Senator Bob Dole died yesterday at 98. And beginning today, travelers heading to the U.S. will be required to show evidence of a negative test within one day of boarding their flight instead of 3 days prior. So the government is clamping down on travelers coming to the U.S. Now, obviously, we know of a hurricane ranking system, the hurricane ranking system, Category 1, Category 3, and we have a good idea of what kind of destruction, and certainly we know the wind velocity. But here's what California is doing, and it makes a lot of sense when you think about it. It's moving towards launching the nation's first heat wave ranking system. And why would that happen? Well, I mean, think of this for a moment. Heat waves have a particularly hard impact in Southern California. We've been talking about this for years. The heat waves are more frequent, more intense, longer lasting over the past 50 years. Guess what? For those of you who don't think climate change is upon us, you know, I'm not hearing that anymore. No one is at this point decrying the existence of climate change or saying it is somewhat of a hoax. Also, you know, I'm not even hearing that it's man-made, the warming of the United States, of the country, that it's not man-made or industry has nothing to do with it. That conversation has stopped. Why? Because it is becoming so obvious. And it is exploding. And the problem is, it is going to be far, far worse. I mean, scientists are talking about 2050, it becomes untenable. But they were saying in the 70s how climate change was going to happen to us around the world. And of course, we would be affected particularly hard because of the heat wave, because of the drought. And the only place where they were wrong is the speed at which it happened. So according to Kathy Bauman, McLeod, director of, Rockefeller Foundation Center that deals with this, launching this ranking system, this heat wave ranking system, is simply climate adaptation and resilience strategy. Why? Because it gives counties, jurisdictions, municipalities the ability of having enough time to cope with what's going on. So it'll be a Category 3 heat wave coming up, and we're going to expect that tomorrow. And what ends up happening, and that would be significant, obviously, if that were to happen. And it makes a lot of sense. The only argument against is how the hell you think people are not going to know. So here is what's happening. The team is creating three heat wave categories in the major U.S. cities. Number one, a low number of expected deaths, because this all translates, incidentally, to deaths, not just temperature, but to expected deaths. 0 to 10% increase in daily mortality, because of the heat wave. Category 3 would indicate a substantial increase in the number of deaths. And so what happens? Well, each category is tied to specific actions, and this becoming law. For example, Category 3 could trigger the opening of municipal swimming pools, air-conditioned shelters by law, and even door-to-door checks on the elderly and other vulnerable members of the community. Local utilities could be prevented from cutting off air conditioning or power for non-payment, for example. During the intense heat waves, the utilities have to go forward. I don't think that is law now. And this group that is promoting this is simply awaiting the approval of the National Weather Service. And this is the only governmental agency that can actually announce official heat wave alerts and categories. And they're doing that now to conduct pilot studies. And we suffer. I mean, that's all there is to it. When we talk about heat waves here in Southern California, I mean, look at, well, even going to Central California, the crop has been damaged. It's a fraction of what it is. Why are beef prices so high? Because that's not a question of distribution chain supply problems. That's a question of there ain't enough cows out there, because during the drought, farmers have to sell off their cows for hamburger meat. And they've all been sold out. And this study that's being done in Kansas City and Milwaukee specifically, in Kansas City, and that's the study that has chosen these two cities for studying. In Kansas City, 41 heat waves resulted in higher mortality since 1975. And they're using this approach, not only meteorological factors, but everything else involved in a heat wave. When heat hits certain cities at certain times. For example, the inner city, a heat wave is more dangerous. Why is that? Because there is a dearth of planting. In my neighborhood, there are tons of trees. Matter of fact, a few blocks from me, and I don't live on that street, there is a street that is completely covered with foliage. Imagine trees going up on the side and 30 feet up or 40 feet up, the branches touch each other from different trees. I mean, that's a lovely thing. And that doesn't happen in the inner city. By the way, that also doesn't happen to me because when I drive through that area going home, I go, wow, I wish I could live here. But here's something, a 17-day heat wave in July of 1980, the average mortality increase was 425%, four times as much. I mean, it's pretty dangerous stuff, and heat waves are going to get worse and worse. And it's a question of, by law, municipalities, businesses may have to be open. For example, malls may have to open at extended hours and air condition the facility simply to, well, avert deaths. Coming up, medical news with Dr. Jim Keeney, and wow, what a shocker it's going to be about the Omicron variant. We'll be right back with that. KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.